Next matter this morning, State of Ohio versus Annabelle Poole. Mr. DiNolfo.
Good morning. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of time for rebuttal, which will be presented by counsel for amicus, John Epker. Chief Justice Brown, may it please the court, my name is Richard DiNolfo. I represent the appellant in this matter, Annabelle B. Poole.
Counsel, could you speak into the microphone? We're having trouble hearing you.
Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you.
This case provides this court with an opportunity to indicate when a trial court must advise a witness of their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. A trial court must advise a witness of this right when testifying at a co-defendant's trial. The cases that were cited in this case are all like darts on a bullseye. They all hit around this central issue, but none of them directly addresses it. The one case that comes the closest to directly addressing this issue is this court's decision in State versus Schaub from 1976. In this case, this court had indicated, in no uncertain terms, the trial court had a duty to protect the constitutional rights of the witness as well as to ensure the defendant a fair trial.
Well, counsel, as a practical matter, how do you do that when, I'm not sure if this accurately, this may overstate the facts in this case, when somebody takes a stand and says, I did it, he didn't, the cat's out of the bag, following where I think you want us to go, you would say, well, the person that volunteered that can't be prosecuted because they weren't warned.
Your Honor, we're not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination that Ms. Poole can't be prosecuted for this offense, but what we are saying is that the state should not be able to benefit from her unwarned admission of these drugs belonging to her. All we're suggesting is that if a person is going to be testifying and they were involved in the same transaction as the person on trial at that time, that witness has to be advised of their rights. And the reason...
Oh, let's change it. I pulled the trigger. He didn't. And there's no other witnesses.
Your Honor, at that point, I would say at the barest minimum, the trial court at least should stop the proceedings and at least have some kind of a sidebar or have some type of a conversation on the record out of the hearing of the jury with the witness to make sure at that point, at the very least, that they understand that they still had this right and that, you know, if you stick with this testimony, you know, that's it. You can be prosecuted for this offense. But the issue in this case is that didn't happen at all.
Let's take it a step further. Ms. Poole said they were my drugs, right?
Or correct.
Whatever she said. And the judge says, whoa, you know, excuse the jury. Gives her the warnings. And she said, whoa, I'm not going to say anything more, having been so advised. Now, what do you do with the testimony that the jury heard? Does the judge then say the jury, you're to ignore that?
I believe under that circumstance, Your Honor, I believe that would probably be the only alternative at that point. I would respectfully submit, though.
So the judge tries to reel it back in after she's blurted it out.
Yes, sir. But I would say that in this particular case, it wasn't an instance where she just blurted this testimony out. It was an instance where the defense attorney in this case asked her some very specific questions. There was some suggestion that there was going to be testimony about how cooperative the defendant on trial at the time was. But the problem in this case is that the defense attorney asked more than that. He asked about the traffic stop. Then he went into asking about the coat that the defendant on trial at the time was wearing. And then that's when Ms. Poole said that it was her coat, it was bought for her by the defendant, and she had established knowledge of the coat at issue.
Well, counsel, the defendant's attorney asked these questions, correct?
Yes.
It wasn't the prosecutor that was asking these questions.
Well, that's true, Your Honor, but we're...
Okay. Now, and under Justice Pfeiffer's scenario, somebody's on the witness stand and they say, you know, it was my drugs. And then the judge cautions and has the conference out of the hearing of the jury and advise, et cetera. And then she decides not to make any further statements. Why would that have to be necessarily not used in the trial? Because the information is not being used against the witness at that time. It's being used in conjunction with the charges against another person, which is the defendant on trial. It doesn't matter to the defendant on trial, I would presume, what happens to that witness, whether the state decides to prosecute or not subsequent to the testimony, but it's still relevant testimony to the issue before the court, which is the guilt or innocence of the person on trial.
Well, I would agree with that, Your Honor, but what we're saying is if that testimony is given and before the witness is going to get on the stand, they have to be advised of their rights. Surely it may not matter to the defendant what happens to the witness after the case is concluded, but of course it would be very helpful to them.
I'm not arguing that we might have some concerns about what happens to Annabelle Poole here, but, you know, your response to Justice Pfeiffer kind of caused me some concern about how you're going to use that information, not with regards to Ms. Poole, but with regards to the ongoing trial. But that aside, it seems to me then that every witness in a criminal case, or maybe even any case, should be advised of their Fifth Amendment rights.
We're not suggesting, Your Honor, that...
Well, you could have somebody who's not charged. She was charged with another crime and pled guilty before she took the stand. She then gets on the stand. She says the coat's hers, the drugs in the pocket are hers, and this fella ends up being acquitted, which probably is the reason why she got charged.
Right.
But what happens if she didn't have a record and she wasn't convicted of this other drug offense and she's just a witness in a criminal case?
Well, as the Court of Appeals indicated, even if she were just — even if we leave the issue of whether she had been a co-defendant or not aside, she still would have had the rights as a witness.
So what you're saying is we should advise everybody that comes forward as a witness about self-incrimination?
We should the courts have to advise a witness who has been involved in a transaction of their rights. The fact that she was previously a co-defendant makes it even more imperative that's being done.
So if a witness is a witness, it presumes they've been involved in some way. If they are present at a shooting, if they are present at a break-in, if there's a drug deal done in front of them, and that's how they happen to be a witness, would you advise those? Would you say that those witnesses need to be advised of their Fifth Amendment rights?
I would say yes, if there was that potential to incriminate themselves, if it was more than just them seeing something, but they were actually involved in the case.
Who makes that determination, if there's a potential for them to incriminate themselves?
The trial judge, in weighing the entire case and looking at the case, what the dynamics are between the parties.
As the evidence is developing, before anybody's heard from that witness that saw the, you know, whatever the defendant's on trial for, has to make a call where some witness would be advised of their rights and another witness in the same trial might not be?
Well, I think it's a case where the judge has to be attentive to what the involvement of the case is, even pre-trial. We're going to be able to see the witnesses that are going to be called, and we're going to have some idea of what their testimony could be or what they might say. And in pretrial conference, those issues will probably come up.
Yeah. Counsel, when normally in a trial, and we don't have discovery generally the way that we'd have in civil matters, so you tentatively don't know or necessarily know what the witness is going to say on the stand. But once the witness is on the stand, and in this particular case with Ms. Poole, did either of the attorneys alert the judge to the way the questioning was going? Because that seems to be a better way. The attorneys basically know what the case is about, and the attorneys can see when there is questioning that's leading to the potential for the witness to incriminate potentially himself or herself. In this case, was there that alerting of the judge in any way?
No, Your Honor, there was not. There was no mention at all by the defense attorney about where he was going, and there was no mention by the prosecutor about where
if there had been a question, for example, was this your coat? There could have been an objection. May we approach the bench? Counsel could have explained to the judge, this is a situation where Ms. Poole may be incriminating herself.
Yes.
With that answer.
Yes, that could have
so,
been.
So, I mean, there are ways to handle the problem case by case. Are you suggesting, though, that if you have a co-defendant who is then a previous co-defendant who is then taking the stand at a trial and going to testify against the previous co-defendant, that should be a matter of course to talk about the Fifth Amendment rights?
Yes, Your Honor, because the witness will not be able to assert that right on their own. And when they entered their plea previously, they were specifically told by the trial court that they were waiving and giving up their Fifth Amendment rights. So the witness now is going into the courtroom with the impression that they had totally given up those rights. They didn't have them anymore. So when they got on the witness stand and they're testifying, they're sworn in as a witness and impressed with the duty to tell the truth and the whole truth, and they've already been told by the judge sitting there listening to their testimony that they don't have this Fifth Amendment right anymore.
There was a relationship between the defendant and this witness, wasn't there?
Yes, Your Honor.
They were boyfriend, girlfriend?
Yes, Your Honor.
And she came to testify to exonerate him.
Well, I don't know.
Is that right?
I don't know that she came to
testify. Well, she came to say that the drugs that he was charged with possessing, certainly they were arrested. She was charged with possessing the drugs in her pocket, and he was charged with possessing the methamphetamine that was in his coat pocket.
Correct.
She comes to court to say, oh, it wasn't his coat, it was my coat, and those were my drugs. She was exonerating him.
Well, that's
right?
That's true, Your Honor.
So they cooked this up themselves.
Well,
not the methamphetamine.
Well,
testimony.
I don't know. Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, I don't know that anything was cooked up. But the only thing we can tell from this—
Well, is there a duty on the part of defense counsel to make sure that a witness realizes the jeopardy? Is there any ethical duty that you advise a witness who is potentially there to exonerate your client?
They're very
that you
well.
You may be exposing yourself. Is there an ethical duty for a defense lawyer in that case?
I'm not 100% certain. There very well could be, Your Honor. I know
we
that
could
the defense
continue to pass this. You know, it takes a village. We could just pass it to the next. They were mine. We got them from. And we just have people come in all the time to unburden the defendant.
Well, Your Honor, I think at the very least that the witness, whatever their motivation might be, when they're testifying and they had been a co-defendant at this, they had been a co-defendant and they're testifying, they have to be advised of their rights. If they want to get after they're told about their rights, if they want to testify, the coat was mine, the drugs are mine.
How would the court know what the response would be to any question before it were given?
Well, I think it may not know the exact response, but certainly the court would be able to appreciate the direction of where the questions are going. You're asking about a traffic stop in this case. Then you're asking about a coat that the defendant was wearing. Then you ask the question about, do you know the drugs were in the coat? Do you know that they were drugs? Do you know that they were in the coat? Do you know what the amount was? do you know what the drugs were? I think at that point the trial court would or should have known that there was a that she was about to give an incriminating response.
Counsel, the attorney for the defendant subpoenaed this witness. It wasn't the state that subpoenaed her.
Well, Your Honor, it doesn't – we don't believe that it matters.
Well,
the fact is she was called as a witness.
Okay, let me just, you know, follow up on Justice O'Donnell's point about a collusive approach to this case. I think it's pretty obvious that the defense counsel would not have subpoenaed this witness to come on the stand for her testimony to be that was his coat and that was his drugs. It wasn't a surprise to the defense attorney that she was going to take the blame for the possession of the drugs.
It may not have been, Your Honor.
Well, I think that that's a fair assumption on our part. So I'm troubled by the fact that this is, to borrow Justice O'Donnell's phrase, cooked up between the defendant and his girlfriend. And now we've got to make a blanket rule that we're going to apply in these circumstances. This just is not — I don't think this is the type of case, and as I read my notes, I don't think I voted to take it in. You know, I'm concerned here that you're asking us to, you know, paint all these witnesses with the same benefit, and I think that this is a highly suspicious activity here. So I'm not.
Counsel, before you sit down, I'm still back to the practical aspects. If we provide some rule that you're requesting, don't we even have to give more guidance to the judges as to how they precisely do this? For example, you suggest they're leading up to a certain number of questions. It would not be fair for the judge to suddenly say, wait a minute, Ms. Poole, I need to advise you in front of the jury of your constitutional rights. The jury ought to be out of there when that takes place.
Right.
And how does the judge gracefully do that without either counsel getting out of their seats, which they didn't? It would seem to me the judge has got to fake that he or she needs to go to the bathroom or something, say, you know, I need a recess here. I'm going to dismiss the jury. Otherwise, we're going to have — that'll be the next case, is the judge — take your case, suddenly realizes what's about to happen, says, whoa, Ms. Poole, I need to advise you of your rights, and proceeds to advise the rights, and then you're here saying, well, that prejudiced the jury as well.
I think, Your Honor, you know, there are evidentiary questions that will come up in trial frequently and usually without warning. And there are times when the court does have to call a recess in the proceedings so that these evidentiary issues can be addressed. And I believe the trial court at that point in time could simply advise the jury, ladies and gentlemen, at this time we're going to call a brief recess. There seems to be an evidentiary issue that the court must address. Please do not discuss this matter with anybody else. And the usual instruction that the trial court would give in that circumstance. The jury can be excused. The issue can be resolved if the jury is brought in. Then if the judge said that the issue has now been resolved, satisfied.
And we're going to you're advocating we put this whole burden on the judge.
Well, Your Honor.
Neither counsel has to do anything.
Well, certainly it would be helpful if either counsel would do something. But what the trial court's duty is to protect the rights of a witness. And that requires the judge to at least be somewhat attentive to what's going on in the proceedings. It's just like it can't be a case like here, for example, where the judge exercises no discretion, where he does nothing at all. That's certainly.
Counsel, what about the defense counsel approaching and said, Your Honor, I have subpoenaed a witness, you know, in the presence of the prosecutor, defense counsel, and the judge, prior to that day's hearing and say, Your Honor, I've subpoenaed a witness, and she's going to admit that it was her drug and not my defendant's. So would you advise her of, her Fifth Amendment rights?
Well, I think, first off, Your Honor, once the judge hears that this witness is potentially going to incriminate themselves, I think the judge at that point in time is going to know that he's going to have to advise this person.
And I think I'm talking about what the responsibility is of the defense counsel in those circumstances to bring it to the attention of the judge and opposing counsel that there is a need. This was not a surprise to the defense attorney, what she was going to say. She was subpoenaed for that purpose. I believe that the defense counsel fell short of what their duties were to have a witness that they know is going to incriminate themselves and not bring that to the attention of the court so the court could advise the witness.
Certainly, Your Honor, yes. That is, yes, I would tend to agree.
Mr. DeNolfo, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Pratt?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Shelley Pratt, and I'm here on behalf of the state of Ohio. The issue here today is, when does a trial court have a duty to warn a witness of the privilege against self-incrimination? The appellant seems to be relying on this court's previous decision in State versus Schwab for the proposition that the trial court here had the duty to inform her of her privilege. However, I think this is a question that's mostly decided on a case facts basis, and in Schwab it was incredibly different facts. The prosecutor first of all asked the court to invoke the privilege for the witness, and in that case the prosecutor knew that the witness was going to incriminate himself. The witness had a prior confession, and I believe there was a videotape of the witness committing the crime.
Isn't that the key, counsel, that the trial judge was told in advance, or there was an objection, and the trial judge then had the authority to exercise discretion and give the warning? But in this particular case, we didn't have anyone alerting the judge to the way the questions developed, correct?
Correct. I think that is the key. I think the trial court in this case could not have been expected to anticipate what she was going to say. She did testify that the coat was hers, but I don't think that was enough. I mean, she could have come up with any number of fact situations for that, not necessarily that the drugs in the pocket were mine. They could have belonged to a third party. She could not have known.
Ms. Pratt, let me ask, rather than dealing with this as the questions are developing, as the incriminating information starts to come out, why shouldn't this court adopt a categorical rule that says that defendants co-defendants and previous co-defendants ought to be provided with a lawyer to discuss the situation, their possible risk of incriminating themselves, and be warned about that risk and their right not to incriminate themselves? Is there a reason the court ought not adopt that kind of rule?
I think it would discourage people from testifying. As far as someone who's still a co-defendant, there's obviously case law that says you have to advise them of their privilege. But someone who is no longer a co-defendant, we're talking any number of different criminal charges they could be subject to. If they're warned about a Fifth Amendment privilege, they may have not testified to anything that was going to require them to invoke that in the first place.
So the best reason you're suggesting is one of possibly chilling their willingness to testify.
Right.
Would it also aren't previous co-defendant, isn't a witness in this situation, likely to be misunderstanding their possible risk of new prosecution, having pled out in a case, having pled to certain counts, had other counts dismissed,
aren't they mistakenly under the impression that they're home free and that they can't be prosecuted further out of the transaction?
I can't speak to what's in a defendant's mind. I would believe that it's likely in some circumstances a defendant would believe that they cannot be prosecuted
anymore. Don't you think that it may make sense to have them disabused of that mistaken belief?
That may make sense, but I also think that that may cause people not to testify. I think, if anything, it could be harmful to the defendant on trial.
Other than the case law that says that the court should advise an active co-defendant, are you aware of any federal case law that has extended this right to witnesses, other than being a discretionary call on the judge?
No. All the federal case law that I encountered in my research basically said the court had a discretion as to whether or not to advise a witness of a privilege in the circumstances where they're not a co-defendant.
So if Ohio were to adopt such a rule, we would be sort of in the forefront of protecting witnesses' rights in addition to defendants' rights.
That's correct.
Well, counsel, it seems that opposing counsel has made much of the issue that the first question should have been the tip-off. Whose coat was it? Or she admits that it was her coat. Keeping in mind that she was subpoenaed by the defense attorney here, her next response or what they could have been, it was my coat and it's been out of my sight for the last week, and I just got it back, and I don't know who put the drugs in that pocket, trying to establish that there was a lack of possession of that coat and then, just miraculously drugs appeared in the pocket. It wasn't necessarily, just because she admitted it was her coat, that's not necessarily a tip-off that the judge has to be in somehow clairvoyant that there's going to be incriminating evidence that is going to, testimony that's going to come from the witness. Who knows what the story would have been?
Correct. And in this case, the prosecutor had actually interviewed her prior to this. She'd never mentioned anything of it. The prosecutor thought that she was going to come testify based on what he'd read in the police report, that she was going to testify that he was being cooperative and that she did not know how the drugs got in the pocket. Nothing in the police report indicated that she was going to incriminate herself or led to that conclusion. There was, I believe, an 80 to 90 pound weight difference between her and the defendant, and there's no mention that this coat was too small on him or looked odd or was a women's coat. I mean, there's nothing to tip the prosecutor off. How could the judge be expected to read her mind and know she was going to incriminate herself?
Well, counsel, coming back to just the practical matter of this kind of situation, sometimes these defendants all have the same attorney. Sometimes they have different attorneys. When, for example, she pled out, I assume she had a different attorney than,
yes,
than he had. Who should the burden be on to make her aware of the risk of what she's about to do? She got a subpoena, so let's assume this was all arm's length, no pre-planning by boyfriend and girlfriend, and she gets a subpoena to come in, and they're even adversarial at this point. Does his defense attorney have an ethical burden to warn her? Say, as far as he knows, she's just hostile at this point. But she was there, and his client has said, hey, was her coat? I love wearing that fur thing around, but had no idea the drugs were in the pocket. That's what he's told his counsel. Does his lawyer have an ethical duty to advise her before she gets up there, she could, you know, where he's going is to try and prove that they're her drugs, and she could have jeopardy attach again, even though she's thought she was done with the courts.
I think his lawyer has more of an ethical duty to his client than to her. I think if his lawyer is aware that she's going to get up there and incriminate herself, he should advise the trial court prior to her testimony so the trial court can warn her. But I think as far as, you know, the defendant's defense attorney warning a witness, I think that would
so
be
so he has a duty to
client.
The court.
Right, I believe
even
he has
though
a duty
his
to the
obligation is to put on the best defense possible for his client.
Right.
He still has a duty toward this woman to protect her from.
Well, I think he has a duty to advise the court to protect her.
But isn't going through his mind, well, that probably is going to spook her, and she's not going to testify then.
I would think that it would then be up to the court whether or not to advise her.
Okay. Ms. Pratt, I want to go through this in a slightly different fashion. If her case is still pending, and in his case, he wants to call her testimony, there's clearly a right at that point for her to have counsel, for her to be warned.
Correct.
If she's a little bit further along the process and she's entered a plea but not yet been sentenced,
same answer.
She's entitled to counsel. She's entitled to be warned.
Correct.
After sentencing, you're suggesting that things change, that all of a sudden, because she's now been sentenced, she's no longer entitled to counsel or to the warning.
Correct.
Why should that matter?
Because that case is no longer pending with her. She's no longer in the process of that case done. These are separate criminal charges that she's at risk of. She's not at risk of anything with respect to the pending case because it's no longer pending.
And is there something that you can point to in the law to support that?
There's nothing directly on point. I'm just in looking at the Booth case where the court mentioned, and it was more dicta than anything, that the trial court had discretion whether or not to warn a witness about his rights. In that case, the trial court did do that, and they were more of a determination whether or not the trial court was permitted to do that, not as we have here, the opposite, whether the trial court should have. In all this case law, there's just basically saying that the trial court has discretion whether or not to warn a witness. There's case law saying that once the witness testifies, I mean, once the co-defendant has been convicted and sentenced, their privilege with respect to that particular case terminates. Not other charges, just that case. I'm just putting that all together. It seems like that's the way it should be.
Well, counsel, I mean, the law is clear that a defendant has the right to counsel at every stage of the proceedings. And if the proceedings are concluded by a sentencing, then there are no more proceedings for her to have counsel present. And that's the way I would view this as far as any right to counsel.
Correct.
This was not a proceeding against her. This was a proceeding against her boyfriend,
right,
where she interjected herself as a witness for the defense, again, at the defense counsel's subpoena.
She had no right to counsel at that point. She was no longer a defendant in any pending criminal case.
There would not, of course. There was nothing to prevent her from asking for counsel. She did not ask for counsel. If she'd asked for counsel, there would certainly have had a right to consult with counsel, would she not have?
I think if she would have asked for counsel, maybe the court would have looked at that as an invocation of her Fifth Amendment right and given her counsel. But she didn't invoke anything. She didn't speak up. There's nothing on the record that shows that she didn't know about her Fifth Amendment right. If there are no further questions.
Are you really asking for a new rule of law, or is this a case where a new rule of law ought to be written, or is this a matter that should be left within the discretion of the court, subject to it being brought to the trial court's attention?
I think this should be left within the discretion of the trial court. I think the case law now is sufficient. If the trial court knows that a witness is going to incriminate themselves, I think the trial court has a duty to advise that witness of her Fifth Amendment rights. But in this case, I don't think that's what happened.
The defendant or the prosecutor's responsibility? I mean, I agree. I don't think there's any new case law to be written here, and this could easily be IA'd, but I'm disturbed by the performance of the counsel here. And I guess what my query would be, should there be a case where we're going to say that when an attorney for either the prosecution or the defense is aware that a witness who is not a co-defendant is going to assume the stand to testify and there is a likelihood of incrimination for criminal activity, that there's a duty to bring that to the attention of opposing counsel and the court prior to the calling of that witness?
Yes, I think that would be a good rule of law. I think that both the prosecutor and the defense attorney, had anyone known she was going to incriminate herself, I think it should have been brought to the attention of the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Epker, I'm going to permit you your 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chief Justice, for your indulgence. May it please the court, John Epker on behalf of the OACDL. A couple points. First of all, I don't think we need a blanket rule that all witnesses in a criminal case need to be advised of the right. That's too unwieldy, too broad. But to answer some of the questions that were brought up, Justice Kupp asked if she raised her right. The thing the court needs to remember is the last time she was in front of Judge Yost was in her plea colloquy when Judge Yost talked to her and instructed her that she was waiving her Fifth Amendment rights. So it's entirely understandable that she didn't think she had any Fifth Amendment rights because the last time she was in front of that court, she was waiving her Fifth Amendment rights. As the problem with the 11th District's opinion is they said, well, she gave up her Fifth Amendment rights as a co-defendant, but then she still retained them as a witness. And the court expected her to appreciate that difference. I'm not suggesting that the court had to stop and instruct Ms. Poole on her Fifth Amendment rights, but at least do something. Afford her the opportunity to talk to an attorney. I agree there is a problem about what was the...
Even without the knowledge of what her testimony was going to be?
I don't think that we have to expect... I think it's unreasonable to expect a trial court judge to be clairvoyant, to interpret what she's going to say. But when you have a witness who was involved in the very same transaction that the criminal defendant is on trial for, it's not surprising that they may say something that's incriminating themselves.
What about the last exchange I had with opposing counsel, and that is to place the burden on either the prosecutor or the defense attorney to have a pretrial conference with the judge to let them know that Ms. Poole is going to be appearing today, and more than likely she will admit that the drugs were hers, Your Honor. Would you please advise her of her Fifth Amendment rights before she takes the stand?
Absolutely. I think that would be advisable to have that happen. But realistically, let's look at everybody's positions in this case, okay? The prosecution's going to prosecute her for saying this, as they did in this case, and I understand why.
Not if she invokes her Fifth Amendment rights and doesn't say it.
All I'm asking for is that someone explain those to her, because it's clear to me that she did not understand that she did still retain those rights. But the defense attorney, their first obligation is to their client. The only party in this whole situation that's neutral is the trial judge. They're the one that should be there to protect the rights. I agree the defense counsel should. I would agree that the state should. Somebody should. The problem is nobody did.
So this is not a case-by-case situation. There's really no new law to be written here. It's merely this judge should have done it in this circumstance.
Well, the court did say in Schaub that a court has a duty to protect the constitutional rights of the witnesses as well as the defendant.
And so that's a case-by-case decision to be made by the trial court.
But if there's new law to be written, Your Honor, I think at the very minimum, as Justice Brown pointed out, when you have someone who at one time was a defendant and is no longer a defendant but is still testifying about the facts which are at issue at trial, at a bare minimum, especially when that witness has been told already that they don't have Fifth Amendment rights, that's when a judge should step in or at least afford counsel to explain this fine distinction to the
witness. Do you think the defendant's position would have been in this situation if the trial judge had taken it upon him or herself before there was any testimony to advise her that she may be incriminating herself and that could be used against her?
I think so. I think the point is she needed to be advised. If a detective would have taken her out of her cell,
I suppose the defendant, the attorney in that case, would not be too pleased with that, would he? Because now the witness is going to clam up, and you've got a defendant whose only escape is through this witness's testimony.
Well, as the Supreme Court precedent dictates, you can advise a witness of their rights as long as you don't drive them off the witness stand. And just telling a witness of their rights surely isn't a problem. We're asking is that she be aware. And the last time she was in front of this court.
Let's take a more complex scenario, because I'm troubled where this case is drifting in terms of defendant's counsel's duties. You have a complex criminal case with maybe lots of different witnesses, and they may not be indicted, and they may not even be under suspicion. But the defense attorney knows all sorts of stuff, and he's doing his darn best to try to lay the blame on other parties. Does that mean that the defense attorney should say, Your Honor, I'm going to try to get this guy to admit his complicity to lessen mine? And every time you do that, the judge calls a halt and advises that defendant. I mean, I can see scenarios where that can be very problematic, and you have defense counsel who are going to lose all their key witnesses that they're going to try to get to admit their complicity to lessen their own clients.
And I'm not asking to start and stop the trial as the testimony goes along, but the bare minimum, at least make sure that the attorney has ask if the witness has consulted with an attorney. Obviously, the hard part is where to draw the line in this case.
So you want to stop, you want to have, before every witness gets on the stand, say, okay, there's this complex criminal case, and you're a key witness, and you might want to consult with an attorney before you get on the witness stand?
I see no problem with that outside the president's jury. If this witness, if Ms. Poole were taken out of her jail cell and questioned by a detective, that detective would have had to give her
a— Are you speaking on behalf of all the defense attorneys? Or
what?
Are you speaking on behalf of the defense bar?
We talked about this in the defense bar, that in our brief, that defendants have their rights, but also witnesses. And all we're saying is that the state shouldn't be able to profit and use this testimony against her. It's clear to me that Ms. Poole did not understand that she had a Fifth Amendment right to assert. No one bothered to stop. No one bothered to explain it to her. And, in fact, she had just been told she did not have it. So that fine distinction between whether she had it or not, no one bothered to call her, or no one afforded her the opportunity to consult with an attorney or explain this situation to her.
And what would you have had the judge say to her?
What?
What would you have had the trial judge say to her?
I think it's perfectly reasonable if the trial judge, knowing that she was previously—
At what point would he address her?
When she's called. I think the trial. I think it's perfectly reasonable.
Before she's sworn in?
Before she's sworn in and say, have you had the opportunity to consult with an attorney about what you're about to do here? I think that's perfectly reasonable. It doesn't prejudice the defendant. It's not, the jury doesn't hear it. But it's giving her the opportunity just to
understand.
How would
the judge know what she was going to testify to?
I'm not expecting the judge to be clairvoyant and anticipate. I think that's too much to expect the judge to do. We don't know what she's going to say. But the fact that she was a co-defendant with these set of facts, She was previously a co-defendant, and she's going to testify about what happened there. She did have a Fifth Amendment right. She just didn't understand it, and no one bothered to explain it to her. That's all I'm asking. I'm not saying to instruct her in front of the jury. I'm not saying you have to stop at every question, but give her the opportunity. No one ever afforded her the opportunity to consult with her attorney about this very unique
set. So you would have a rule that if a witness has been a co-defendant or in somehow implicated in the case for which the defendant is being tried, that that's an automatic trigger for the judge to admonish the witness prior to testimony about their Fifth Amendment rights?
I would say either admonish or do something. Afford them the opportunity to consult with the attorney. She didn't even have that.
So who was going to get that attorney for him?
She had counsel. No one ever bothered to stop and get her attorney.
But what attorney did she have?
Mr. DeNolfo was her attorney. He was not aware that she was testifying that day.
Okay, but her attorney for the previous case?
Yes.
Okay, his representation stopped when that case was over.
Okay. Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
So she didn't have an attorney, so the court would have had to, if she couldn't afford an attorney, didn't have one, appoint an attorney for her at that point?
Done anything, yes. I mean, I
wait a minute. You can't say done anything. I want to know what you say. What do you think they should have done?
I think they could have instructed her as to the situation. He could have, the judge could have gotten an attorney for her, called her former attorney, a public defender, to advise her of her rights. All we're asking is that someone needed to explain her rights to her, and no one did. To her detriment.
Thank you, Mr. Epker.
Thank you.